time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here, and this is episode number 14 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
more chickens.
More chickens. We drink a ton. I'm talking a ton of coffee, but most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
We hug our chickens every day. Don't forget and kiss them, too. We brew coffee from a local coffee house here in Bel Air, Maryland. Coffee. What kind of coffee are we brewing today, Holly Ann?
Up Snickerdoodle.
Woo!
We're back to Snickerdoodle.
They have the best coffee. If you're local and you love delicious coffee and really awesome scones, head on over and give them a visit. You will not be disappointed. We're here and it's the beginning of March. And oh my God, what have you been up to? I got a weird story for you. So you know how Penny's been molting?
Yeah.
Like
a very long molt.
A long molt. I feel like she had a short molt in the fall. And then mid like winter, like she started this molt and she's finally kind of over it.
Okay.
At the end of the molt, she grew spurs.
Oh my heavens.
Yes.
Okay.
So what the hey was going on with that?
Has she had any other rooster symptoms?
Nothing. Just she spurs. Lays eggs.
Okay.
So, and she's what? She is over a year old.
Okay.
So, it's
she should be going on 2 years, shouldn't she?
Yes, she's going on 2 years.
So, I think the most obvious answer there is that she has too much testosterone. Her systems must be out of balance.
Where in the heck is she getting this testosterone?
I don't know. Do you have a strategy for dealing with it?
I'm looking up some herbal stuff that might help.
Uh-huh.
And actually, it's a product we're going to talk about today.
Oh, the Rupipulcha, yeah, yes. Because it has a lot of mint oil in it, and
yes.
Mint can help.
We're going to try that and see.
Apparently, soy is another thing that you can use to help lower testosterone levels, but I don't know what your delivery would be.
It's crazy. I don't know. Soybean,
maybe. Yeah, feed her some soy. Some tofu.
Nothing else different, except for now she's walking around with two spurs.
Yeah. She's not, how long are they?
I don't know, like a half inch or more?
Good heavens.
She's not aggressive. She's not changed in any other way except
she
for
just
having
has spurs.
Two spurs. I mean, she might as well have some chaps on those legs, too.
Cowgirl Penny.
Cowgirl Penny. Let's rename her. So while we're talking about, like, Midwest stuff, I want to take a second and bring up Iowa Blue Farm.
Yes.
It's a women-owned, family-run, all-natural chicken treat company. And you know where it is? The Midwest.
In the Midwest. And it's a woman doing business.
Yay! Hands up. We love those women-owned companies. They make 100% all-American oven-dried black soldier fly grubs for all your poultry. It doesn't matter if you don't have chickens, if you have turkeys, if you have geese, if you have, which we learned the other day,
quail.
Any of these poultry
pheasants
will eat some grubs. And you know what? They're packed really, there's a lot of calcium.
Yeah, concentrated source of calcium and protein, and it's a treat you can feel good about feeding your birds.
And now that we're going into spring, well, it's in the horizon.
Uh-huh.
You want to start making sure they have extra protein and calcium for those eggshells, so that hopefully if you drop one, it doesn't crash on the floor. So if you haven't given them a try yet, go over to iowabluefarm.com and check out their website. They have the treats, and they also have an organic feed, which is really good.
Yes.
And give it a try. They're baked with love, always.
Packed with care, and shipping is
always free. Okay, so now that we got some grubs for our babies.
Do you know who else likes the grubs?
Who?
My dogs.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
I'm serious. I take the bag out of the pantry. They see the blue bag and they run over and bake. They sit down and do their pretty baking
well,
stuff. Yeah.
Everybody loves these grubs. The blue bag. Everyone is running to this blue bag. So we're ready for our breathe spotlight. So we are this week talking about a chicken.
Yeah, a very old and rare chicken. We often talk about old and rare chickens.
This often.
Is a very old and rare chicken. It's from the Normandy area of France.
Another French.
Yeah, it's the Crèvecoeur.
Yes. And this chicken would also be excellent with a crocheted beret.
But it has a huge crest on it.
It has a big crest, but it would sit right there.
Yeah, you'd have to tuck some feathers in, but you could probably make it work.
It'd be so cute, hang them out like little bangs.
So the Crèvecoeur is named after the village of Crèvecoeur, where it was developed. It happens to be near Calvados, where the famous apple brandy is made.
Oh, yes, and we love that brandy.
Absolutely. We love chickens, we love brandy. So the Crevre Coeur made its way to the U.S. sometime in the 19th century, and it was accepted by the American Poultry Association into the Standards of Perfection in 1874.
Wow.
Now, the Crevre Coeur numbers dropped drastically. They waned in the U.S. and other places, but in France, the Crevre Coeur numbers dropped drastically after the First and Second World Wars.
Really?
Yeah. And it remains a critically endangered breed here in the U.S., as well as the rest of the world.
Wow.
So the Livestock Conservancy has the Crevre Coeur on the poultry conservation list under...
Is it a watch?
No, it's critically endangered.
Critically endangered? That's not good.
No. And the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, which is known as the FAO, also lists the Crevre Coeur as endangered.
Ooh.
Recovery work on the Crevre Coeur in France began... Can you guess when it began?
1970s, maybe?
Exactly,
when,
right?
Let's say the Java. Was it the Java that started in the 70s? Am I getting some of my breeds mixed up now?
It was the... Well, the Swedish Flower.
The Swedish Flower was the 70s.
It was definitely in the 70s.
There was another one I thought that was the 70s. But again, we talk about this industrialism versus naturalism.
Right.
And then the natural... taken of the different times and how it kind of goes in and out and it creates a pattern. So we are definitely now in a naturalistic kind of pattern.
Right. So we've sort of swung back to a lot of those values that were popular
in the 1970s. Let's hope it sticks. There's definitely room for everything in industry and naturalism. And let's just hope that we keep protecting these animals.
The importance of biodiversity is something that really can't be neglected. And I think that even as backyard chicken keepers, there are things that we can do to contribute to this.
Yeah, and it's by maybe taking and getting a chicken that you normally wouldn't get that's on an endangered list and giving it some options and other things also that we can do.
Sure.
In the big picture. But as, you know, a backyard chicken farmer, you can kind of keep
it rolling. Remember, a lot of these heritage breeds are perfectly appropriate for a backyard flock.
They are. And what industry doesn't like about them is they usually take longer to lay an egg.
Right.
And they don't lay as many.
Right, right.
So, and they're bigger usually. So it's a lot more to take care of.
Bigger and slow growing, right.
Right. So it's a bigger chicken to take care of. So, you know, you can do your part by, as a backyard chicken farmer, taking in some of these chickens and adding to the numbers.
So back to our Crevre Coeur, this is a very distinct looking chicken.
When we looked this chicken up, I was like, oh my goodness. And if you look this chicken up, you will also say, oh my goodness.
So it's a fancy breed. Most of them are all black. There are some color variations, but okay. Most of the time what you're going to see is the black Crevre Coeur.
And everything I looked up was the black.
Is the black, right. So they have a pretty big crest on their head.
Yes.
And their most distinguishing feature is a V-shaped comb.
Is the strangest comb I think I've ever seen.
It's like a little horn, little set of horns.
It's what it looked like.
Peeping out of their, peeping out of their crest.
I mean, or eyebrows.
I never thought about that. Okay.
I might never be able to look at it.
Right.
It looks like two, like, old grumpy man eyebrows.
The Crevre Coeur also has blue legs. And this large and puffy crest of theirs, it really means that it's hard for them to do unsupervised free range.
You got to make sure those are clipped up. So if you get these birds, they're going to be a little bit more grooming.
Yeah, so if you're not keeping them, you know, in a large pen and you're letting them free range, you definitely need to do something about the sight restrictions.
Yes.
That come from that incredible crest.
Yes, definitely.
So they have a sort of small beard and muff, too, as
okay.
well. And one of the things you probably want to keep in mind about these birds is that they're supposed to not do very well when they're cold and wet.
Is it the same thing as with the silkies?
I think their body feathers, they have the barbicels on their body feathers, but I think just all that muff, all that crest and muff,
yeah.
If they get wet, cold, chilled, they don't necessarily do
so
really well.
Yeah, and they definitely, you know, will do better in a warmer climate.
Yeah, I've read the same thing. They can deal with the northern climate, but you just have to make sure that they're, you know, dry, don't catch cold. If I had this chicken and it were a very cold and damp environment, I might put a small panel heater in the coop to help them dry out.
Yeah. I mean, definitely want to take provisions.
Yeah.
So this is one of those chickens that would be good to have, but have to make extra provisions to take care of.
Right. They're definitely, I mean, they're a practical breed in that they're pretty good layers. They lay about 3 medium-sized white eggs a week.
Which is,
that's
I didn't
decent.
Expect when I was doing the research to find that they lay white eggs.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they don't really have white earlobes.
Can you even see their earlobes under their
crest?
I don't know.
I don't know. But when I was looking, I was like, They lay white eggs.
I think a lot of the older continental breeds do. I mean, we know the Mediterraneans do.
Their legs, the blue legs are really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty. So yeah, you don't necessarily think of them as practical because they look like this fancy ornamental chicken.
Right. They're definitely different looking.
But they make a good backyard bird if you're going to make a few provisions. They're very calm and easy to handle, very friendly.
That is one of their really good points, mm-hmm. is that they would be good for families because they're friendly chickens.
Right.
And they become used to being handled and having things happen with them and taking care of them. And they could be sometimes used as a show chicken because they have quite a unique look to them.
Right.
And they could also add to conversations at parties because someone's going to come look at your chickens. And say, that is really a wild-looking chicken. Like,
again.
And then it's going to bring in conversation.
Right. Again, it's a fancy, ornamental-looking breed.
They're very fancy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah, definitely. So, I mean, friendly, fancy. You just have to make provisions with weather-wise.
Right.
And make sure that they stay dry. So that is a good thing. And are they easily found? Did you find?
I found a couple places. They're becoming more readily available. You can, of course, go to the Livestock Conservancy's breeder directory and see if you can find breeders near you. But they were also readily available in a couple of other commercial settings, which will be fine if you're just looking for a pet quality bird. If you want to breed, obviously, you want the best genetics.
Right.
There are a few online groups, including a Crevecoeur Recovery Facebook group, that would probably be very, very helpful if you're trying to locate breeding stock.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that we've talked about the Crevecoeur, what we want to do is bring you an interview with Jeanette Barringer from the Livestock Conservancy. And we did this chicken because she owns Crevecoeur.
Yeah, she breeds Crevecoeurs, yeah.
We always like to, when someone comes on to speak with us, to kind of highlight their breed of chicken.
Yeah, give them a little tribute. The chicken that they work with or what's their favorite breed.
So we hope that you enjoy this interview with Jeanette as much as we did. Holly, do you want to tell everybody what Jeanette does?
Sure. Jeanette is the Senior Project Manager with the Livestock Conservancy. If you're a regular listener, you know we routinely talk about the Livestock Conservancy.
All the time.
And their poultry conservation list. I've been a member of the Conservancy for a while now for both my sheep and my chickens.
So we wanted to speak to Jeanette, who we found out is quite an interesting lady.
So Jeanette, we have read that you have the largest flock of Crevecoeur chickens in the U.S. Is that correct?
I think so, as far as I can tell, if not the largest, one of the largest, but definitely when I got started, after a couple of years, for sure, because when we started with them, hardly anybody was working with them, so it's been a long haul, all uphill, to get more Crevecoeurs on the ground.
And how many do you have?
Oh, gosh, right now, probably about 100.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've probably got about 30 cockerels right now.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Where did you say morning, noon, and night?
That's amazing. And we just told everybody, when was it, a week or two ago, about France and their new law.
The new national law that protects the sights and sounds of the countryside, including
the cockadoodle-doo. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think that's really important, and you hear it time and time again where people move to the country, but they don't want the smells and the sounds. And
right.
One thing that we did with our farm is we got our farm declared a voluntary agricultural district within the county.
Okay.
And that designation ensures that if anybody buys property around us, the real estate agent has to reveal that there is a working farm right next door. And so no one can say, I moved in. I didn't know there was going to be 100 roosters next door. They're required to tell. So
okay.
At least it's one way to give people a heads up that this is the country, this is a working farm, and you're not going to push my chickens out.
Right. So, that's important.
Yeah.
Plus, they have such fancy rare breed chickens next door. How could they ever not love that?
Well, and the roosters are crowing at 3 in the morning. You know what's really funny, though, is I have two bloodlines, Crevecoeurs, a French bloodline and an American. And I swear the Americans, when they crow, it sounds like they're going, Happy New Year! It makes me giggle all the time.
That's great.
So it doesn't bug me at all, but thankfully, my neighbors aren't very close, so I haven't had to ask.
I love rooster crowing.
Rooster crowing is pretty awesome.
It is.
So can you tell us a little bit about the personality of the Crèvecoeur Rouge? Are they friendly and gentle?
It depends on the bloodline. The American bloodline birds are actually fairly calm. We imported some French blood through our friends at Greenfire Farm, and the French boys came with an attitude.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So little by little, we've been very careful to select for good temperament. And it's now, this will be fourth generation birds that have incorporated the French blood. And this year, I've got some roosters that are really nice.
Nice.
That's awesome.
It just takes a while. And I was always taught you get only what you tolerate. And if you tolerate having some ill-mannered roosters around, that's what you're stuck with. So I'm very careful about the types of birds that I breed, and temperament is up there with beauty and type, and so it's really important to me. 8-pound rooster hitting your leg every day, yeah, it's not fun.
That's what we always say, how important personality is with your chickens, and any kind of chicken you have, rooster, hen. It's so important that you can handle them and they're friendly with you.
Yeah, I don't handle mine that much except for maybe a couple times a year when I'm doing breeder selection. Otherwise, you know, I treat them like chickens and mm-hmm. I love them and they follow me around like dogs. But, you know, I really don't try to pick them up too much. And that way everybody's got a healthy respect and mm-hmm. they behave like chickens instead of, you know, behaving like I'm a big chicken walking into their pen.
Right, that's true. So,
yeah.
That works for me.
It would be pretty hard to handle. If you have 100 birds at a time and you're breeding,
right.
You're not going to be handling them every day as if they were your pets.
Exactly.
Yeah. But so, I will say I can sell the hens till the cows come home as laying birds. And so, you know, I have a very strong local market for all the hens or pullets that don't make the cut as breeder. I've got people lined up out the door that want them here locally. And as a backyard layer, they're fabulous birds.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lay really well. The girls do not have attitude. The challenge with them is they have that fancy, you know, top knot on their head.
Right.
And so the line of sight for them is not very good. And so I tell people, these are not free-range chickens. You've got to protect them in a fenced-in area or a chicken coop because they can't see hawks coming. They can't see four-legged predators coming. They can only see, like, what's right in front of them.
Right.
But the upside is, if you want to catch them, they're really easy to sneak up.
You're not going to be running too fast to catch them.
No. And they're calm enough that they typically don't freak out when you pick them up. If you do it gently, they're pretty calm. That's
nice.
One of the traits I really like about them. Recent decades, most people have just used them as show birds.
Right.
Okay.
And so what's happened is they've got smaller and smaller over the years, and our project is trying to bring them back to breed standard, where they are big, beautiful birds. And by the way, if they're big and beautiful, they do great in show.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But I just want the birds to meet the breed standard from the APA. I want them to have good personalities, mm-hmm. and that way they've got a future. You know, they don't have a future, you know, if they're not desirable to have. And mm-hmm. we've learned a lot. The biggest challenge with the Crèvecoeurs when we first got into them is there was very little documented about them, little anecdotal stuff here and there. And thankfully, I know enough French to be dangerous, so I went through old French journals and we've put together a history of the breed, which goes back a lot further than people told me in the beginning. I kept being told, oh, they were developed in the 1800s. Well, I actually went to Crèvecoeur in Normandy and talked to the people that grow Crèvecoeurs there, and they're like, oh, no, they've been around since the 12th century.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
They've been around a long, long time. And they're, you know, they're not a chicken for everybody because, you know, they are fancy. you know, you've got to protect them from predators. They have beards, and so you know, they can get really messed up if they're in the muck, in the mud, and it's just, you know, putting the pieces of the puzzle together, and you start with looking at the history of the breed, and we gathered all these tidbits of information together, and what's been really, really exciting for me is the little anecdotal things that are coming up from, like, the 1800s, like, sometimes the chicks will have white primary feathers, but don't worry about that, they're going to shed out and, you know, molt out and get replaced with black ones. And sure enough,
wow,
I have little babies that have white primaries, and you're like, oh crap, what's that?
Right. Yeah.
And then they molt it out and they're never seen again.
That's amazing. Wow. We have an egg question for you. We read that the crab core can lay eggs up until 7 or 8 years, that they're a late layer in life. Do you find that in your experience with them also?
Well, you know, I have a 14-year-old leghorn that still lays.
Wow!
But, I mean, chickens will lay throughout their lives, even when they're older. It's just, you know, you might have 6 a year as opposed
to
160.
Correct, yeah.
I will say the crème cores I found to be really great winter layers.
Right,
and nice. They, if I'm hatching in the spring, my pullets will start their pullet eggs around October, November, and by December, they're ready to rock and roll, and they're starting to crank out the eggs, and they'll consistently lay through maybe July, August, they're still laying.
Nice. Wow.
You know, the young birds.
Right.
They've been fabulous layers for us, and they lay white tinted eggs.
Okay.
And fairly sizable, not extra large, but, you know, respectable sized eggs.
Nice.
And they're a non-sitter. Don't expect them to incubate their own eggs.
That's what I was going to ask.
That's what else we were finding, that they don't really go broody. They're not a broody hen.
Yeah, they would never select it to do that. So, you know, don't expect them to hatch their own chicks.
Do you use an incubator, or do you use a broody hen of a different breed? Incubator?
Yeah, I always use an incubator, because the way we want to hatch out 100 to 200 birds a year, and that was scattered all over the place, that would, time-wise, that would be too complicated.
Okay.
So I'll hatch batches of 50 to 100 birds, raise them out, figure out what I'm going to keep as breeders, and then move the others on.
And the hens are saying, yeah, we're not going to sit on those eggs, so you need to bring in an incubator.
And I just got this really cool incubator that I was asked to try out called a Murado, and it spoiled me rotten because it's got an automatic humidity pump in it.
Nice.
And that was a big game changer.
Nice.
And having consistent humidity really made quite a difference, and the hatchability has improved quite a bit.
Oh, great. So, that's great.
Yeah, I've been really happy with that incubator, because I used to have a big sportsman, which they're great if you've got really big batches of eggs, you know, like 200 eggs. I'm doing more like 50 eggs a batch now, and the littler incubator takes up less space, and it's so precise for small batches that it works out really well.
That's great.
Yeah.
We want to move on to talking about you a little bit, so that everyone can kind of get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
In your teens, you started in Boston in the aquarium, New England National Aquarium.
Yeah, I owe the New England Aquarium a lot, because I was a very introverted kid, but loved animals, and they had a docent program, a volunteer program, their education department, and back then in the 80s, they let their volunteers do a lot more than they probably do now.
I'm sure.
But what they did was taught me public speaking, and you know, I was, you know, I knew the facts about the animals, but how to be comfortable about talking about that in front of crowds.
Right.
And so the first step would be like unannounced talks at the tide pool, then announced talks at the tide pool. So you went from maybe a handful of people to 50 people. And I was 16 years old, and by the end of my training, I was doing announced talks on the giant ocean tank on the dive platform in front of 500 people, and I had to talk about whatever was swimming underneath me and sound like I knew what I was talking about.
Nice. And then from working there and your love with animals, you wanted to go into veterinary medicine, correct? And then
until I worked at a vet practice and realized, geez, I love the animals, but I really don't want to deal with the customers.
I was a veterinary technician for 15 years here in Baltimore, and it's such a rewarding career. You know, it's like you said, though, you're like, please, just let the animals come in on their own.
the training enabled me to, it actually gave me the basics for the rest of my career that were so important. Like, you know, people look at animals and say, oh, it's cute. Well, those years of being a vet tech, I'm looking at their butts to see
if they have
diarrhea, or looking at, are their eyes shiny, their ears have problems, or it's so embarrassing when I go to a friend's house.
Oh, yeah.
The first thing I do is check their dogs for ticks.
My husband tells everybody when I pet their dog, he says, Chrissy's not just petting your dog. She's going to give your dog a physical exam while she pets your dog.
Yeah.
It's like once you do that, like, you can never just look at an animal the same. Yeah, you're looking at them medically.
But it gave me the skills I needed for the next step of my career, which was to be a professional zookeeper.
I love that.
I started out, you know, at Roger Williams Zoo in Providence, and was there for almost 20 years and worked with everything from, you know, polar bears to penguins to cheetahs to giraffe, you know, all kinds of stuff. And one of the, I actually ended up being a lemur specialist for a long time.
Wow. I love it. So was the lemur your favorite animal? What was your favorite animal at the zoo?
Actually, it was this donkey that I go to lunch with every day.
Oh, I love it.
His name was Roger. And the funny thing is, when I became a head zookeeper there, and I was in charge of Madagascar, Australasia, and the Heritage Breeds Farm. And after being in that work for so many years, I started appreciating the farm animals and started talking more about my Dexter cattle than I was my Natchez street kangaroos. And all the young and up-and-coming zookeepers are like, I don't want to be in the farmyard. Those aren't real zoo animals. And so I'm like, fine, you go pick up monkey poo and I'll take care of the cow.
I love
it. And what I do is get a cup of coffee and hook up my cow to the halter, and I go for a walk around the zoo with the coffee while they're down in the lemur house picking up poo. That's how to start my day. But what was really extraordinary is, you know, in walking the cows for their daily exercise, we usually hit near the front gate as the front gate was opening, because that's just the way the timing worked out. And these kids would come running up, and they'd be like, oh, my God, look at those bulls. I'm wearing red. I need to get out of here. First off, I wouldn't be walking around with a bull.
Right.
Second of all, you know, just because they've got horns doesn't mean they're a bull. These are cows.
Right.
To see the disconnect of kids and where their food comes from and what farm animals are. Those cows I've heard be called everything from a horse to a camel.
That's crazy. They just
are so disconnected. But I have a load of fun with chickens now. And I retired from the zoo and I got recruited by the Livestock Conservancy to come and work here. And I've never looked back, and I'm having way too much fun with chickens these days, because people have rediscovered chickens as this amazing animal.
They are.
It's far more complex than people give them credit.
Yes.
And I have some traveling animals that I go to different events with, or, you know, even fundraisers, I'll bring a chicken. And I always have to laugh because you pull out a big rooster and everybody's just like, oh my God.
I know.
I'm thinking he's going to bite me. And it's like, no. You know, and people are just struck by their beauty and how interesting they are. Mm-hmm. And chickens are the gateway to get people excited about heritage breeds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, what they mean to our history and our culture. And, you know, and I could go on and on about the history of the Crevé Coeur because I've dug up all kinds of interesting things. And my current thing is to try and prove that it was Crevé Coeurs that went down on the Titanic. Did you ladies know? Four fancy French chickens, in fact, did go down with the Titanic.
I did not know that. And
look it up. And they were owned by a Mrs. White, and there are multiple witnesses that heard the roosters crowing right before the ship went down.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm still trying to figure out what chickens were on there, and I've got some good leads, but, you know, what a tale that would tell if you could figure out what they were.
Right? Exactly. That's true.
Yeah, since leaving my student career here at Servancy, I still can't believe I get paid to do what I do. I love it. I'm in the field. Well, normal times, I'm in the field a lot. They call me Where's Waldo in the office because they never know where I'm going to be. And, you know, I could be in the high desert in Nevada or, you know, the low country in South Carolina because it's those remote places where you can find some really interesting populations.
Okay, and that was Jeanette Barringer. Thank you, Jeanette, for that awesome interview. And if you'd like to learn more about the Livestock Conservancy, you can check them out online.
Yeah, we'll have a link to them in our show notes. I just want to thank Jeanette again. She has an encyclopedic knowledge of rare breeds.
She really does, and I hope everyone enjoys that as much
as we did. It's always a treat to talk to her.
Okay, so now we have to move on to cracking the eggs.
A new and exciting entrance.
And this week, we're talking because, you know, we're coming into major egg season.
We are.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're like, I got a dozen eggs on the counter, a dozen in the fridge, and nobody wants scrambled eggs again for dinner. So we're talking this recipe, which is everyone's kind of fave, spring quiche.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Quiche is the perfect dish to kick off spring egg season. I mean, it uses lots of eggs, but it's still pretty hearty. You have the crust and the melty cheese, if you go that way, warm veggies, etc. And asparagus and some of the other early vegetables make a delicious quiche.
I actually love asparagus in my eggs. So I'm going to kind of go off the subject just a little bit, uh-huh. But my mom would always put asparagus in eggs.
Mine too.
And it was so funny because it's not a combination that you would think that would be good, but it's delicious.
Oh, it is.
And yeah. She would scramble eggs and put asparagus in.
My mother did exactly the same thing. And it's not like our mothers grew up in the same neighborhood.
No, but they kind of did grow up at that time where it was like a lot of immigrants were coming over.
Right.
And mine had the chicken farm, so they had this overabundance of eggs that didn't go or whatever. Then they'd find a way to make them into different things. So they would mix everything they had with the eggs.
Yeah. My family was actually in the U.S. for a long time, but my grandparents had come through the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So I think that was really formative for them. So they were very frugal and used everything.
Yes, they used everything without a doubt. The quiche is awesome, especially with some asparagus in it, because that can be a party dish.
Oh, absolutely. You can put your asparagus in concentric circles.
Oh, that would be cool. Fancy. You could do that. You could serve this for breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Absolutely.
And it is good at any time. And the quiche, it's delicious. You can do it with or without the pie crust.
Right. If you want it a little lighter, you can just skip the pie crust and make it crustless. I like to put some salad greens on a plate and serve the crustless quiche on top of that.
That's a good deal.
Sometimes I don't make the crust if I'm just in a hurry, but other times it's just to save calories.
A lot of times I don't do the crust. I just pull out the cast iron skillet, put it on the stove, put everything in there,
yep.
Let it start to cook, and then pop it in the oven and finish baking it.
Sort of like a frittata.
Kind of.
Uh-huh.
And then kind of heat it after that and cut it into pie slices.
Right.
But without the crust.
You can make it your own. You can do a crust or no crust. You can add meat, cheese, any kind of veggie that you'd like.
Yeah. And you know what is the fun thing is, you also, this can take on a different taste every night of the week if you had to.
Right.
So, you know what's really, I was thinking of chickpeas with some Indian spices.
Oh, and cauliflower too. That would be
Which
really
would be
good.
Really good. Those things are kind of mild and they take on the taste of the spice.
Right.
So, you could put a little bit of curry in there and do, you know, just kind of make it different. You could even do an Italian quiche.
You could have endless variations.
You could have fun with it.
You could. Quiche at its essence is just a delicious savory pie.
It is a pie.
Right.
And who goes, you can't go wrong with pie.
No, essentially it's that custard base that we've talked about so many times, just with no sugar in it.
Right, so it's savory.
Right.
You could even do this with your kids.
Yeah.
It could be like, hey, what are we adding to the quiche tonight? Everybody gets to pick something. Everybody gets to prep it.
Right.
You get to put it in. So this is one that's really cool. You can take it with you to different parties if you have to bring a dish. And you can make it your own.
Quiche used to be, it was like the mainstay of the mid-century modern dinner party.
Quiche.
But it fell out of favor in the 1980s. And if you remember this, there was a book published that was called Real Men Don't Eat Quiche.
I do remember that.
Yes. And the funny thing is, it was a satire of masculine stereotypes. I mean, it wasn't to be taken seriously, but it had the effect of making quiche into a chick food.
Oh, because it's so fancy.
Yeah, well.
But you know what? Eggs are not...
I'll eat all the quiche. I don't need to share it.
You don't need to share it, Pete. You're not getting any quiche. So, but eggs really aren't. They're high in protein.
Yeah.
You think about people who are building muscle.
Right.
Or working out a ton.
Uh-huh.
A lot of these people just eat raw eggs.
Well, like we've talked about before, if you're eating eggs from pastured or free-range hens, we know that the nutrient count is way higher.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely not a chick food, but it's actually made a resurgence where it's a bigger thing. And I think part of it is that backyard chicken farming is bigger. So people have a lot more eggs. So they're like, what are we going to do with them? And they're looking back at these old recipes. So it's one of my faves.
And we really have to go back, like 50s, 60s, 70s. I mean, even in the 90s, we were told that eggs were bad for us.
My mom never stopped giving us eggs.
My mother didn't either.
I think, wasn't it like one egg a week or something?
It was one to two eggs, maybe a time or two a week.
And you're
meanwhile,
like,
my mother was making eggs every day.
I mean, yeah. And you're like, how can eggs be that bad? How can eggs be bad for you?
It was supposed to be fat cholesterol. There was this very anti-fat diet period in the 1990s.
It was like, all your cholesterol is due to eggs. Meanwhile, the 80s were known for processed food.
Right.
And that's where everybody was getting their high cholesterol.
It's true.
We kind of lived off of some of it, too.
Yeah. So if you do have anyone around who is a stickler about the quiche, they're not going to eat the quiche because it's chick food, you can eat the entire quiche yourself.
That's a good thing.
Or you can just tell them that it's a savory pie.
It's a pie.
Pete doesn't care. If it's in a pie crust, he's probably going to eat it, as long as there's not coconut in it.
Pete's like, bring me the pie. I will eat the quiche pie.
He's a pie guy, yeah.
He's a pie guy?
He's a pie guy.
Joe is more of like a cake guy.
Now, I will say that Pete is a cake guy, too.
Pete's the dessert guy.
He kind of is. But well, he married the right woman, didn't he? Yeah.
So, yeah, you can't go wrong with it. Have fun with it. We'll have the recipe up.
Variations. Yeah. And again, with the gluten and dairy-free variations, because I can't have the gluten and dairy.
Exactly. So have fun with it. Please, if you make these recipes, you can email us or send us your pictures. We'd love to see them.
We want to see your fancy quiches.
And we might put them up on our Instagram page for everyone to see also.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to our retail therapy.
That was very special. That was a new one. Is that just spur of the moment inspiration?
I don't know. This is like some of my favorite parts are coming out with these on the fly. Okay, so this week for retail therapy is something that you've used before.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite supplements.
And we, instead of like going with, you know, something for us, this week we went for something for the chickens.
Of course.
Because we want to switch it up every now and then.
Right.
So this week we're bringing in Ropa Poultry Complete.
Yeah, so this is an additive for your flock's water. It's a natural supplement, so there's no egg withdrawal.
And that is something that we always look for when giving the chickens anything, because what you put into your chicken, you will eat in your egg. So this is made by a Dutch company and first used in the U.S. by a big chicken companies in place of antibiotics.
Yeah, and I just want to note, we're not affiliated with Ropa in any way.
No.
Just big fans of the product.
Yeah.
So it really is all natural products. It's a blend of, I'm gonna give you the list.
Let's just list what's in it, okay, so everybody can hear it.
Oregano oil.
Okay.
Cinnamon oil.
Mm-hmm.
Pepper tincture, black pepper tincture.
Okay.
Milk thistle extract.
Okay.
Artichoke extract.
For your Italian chickens.
Peppermint oil. Eucalyptus oil, thyme oil, and propylene glycol to keep it viscous.
Okay. So all these things are natural.
Right.
And basically you add it to the water like once a month or every few weeks or so.
What I usually do is take 1 week out of the month and give it to them for about a week.
Five to 7 days. Yeah. And it has on there how much you measure and put it in a gallon of water. And it's all natural. And see, these are the things that we want to see for our chickens that can naturally help them through different things. Now, oregano, it does kind of act as an antibiotic in chickens.
It does. And again, that's why some of the big chicken companies started to use it. Because after prophylactic use of broad-spectrum antibiotics was banned, they needed something that could prevent problems.
But it's
and it was all natural. Right.
It's natural. So I actually do give mine oregano every now and then.
Just a
mixture of herbs that I give them.
Right.
And it's not going to take away all the bad, all the good bacteria here.
Right, right.
So it's an all-natural thing, and it's something that, you know, it's your choice if you want to give them or not, but it's in here. And it can help with molting. It can help with different things, like, so to kind of boost them, to get them through these phases a little quicker.
Right. So the Ropa Poultry Complete company, the parent company, they claim that Ropa Poultry Complete will contribute to healthy intestinal flora.
Okay.
A strong immune system. Better quality and bigger quantity of eggs.
Okay.
A faster and better molt, and protection during stressful periods.
Which a molt can be stressful.
Right. And so these things haven't been tested in actual study.
Right.
But I will tell you, the way I use it is kind of
a boost.
I would say as a preventative.
Right. You're not using this to fix anything.
Right.
What you're using this product for is to enhance how they feel.
Right. So I first started using it when we got our Brahma chicks, when they were pullets, one of them had coccidiosis.
Okay.
And I'd never had it that badly before. You know, it shows up every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
Coccidia is, you know, it's natural, it's bacteria, it's around.
Yeah.
But Caramel had it so badly that there was blood.
Right.
Which was really scary. So we had her on the outbreak dose for 7 days, and then we backed the dose down and did another 5 days on the preventative dose. But I felt like she wasn't back to herself.
Right.
And I did not want to give her any more cord. So I saw the Ropa Poultry Complete. We decided to give it a try. And I think it really did help her gut bacteria readjust itself.
Right.
And the diarrhea went away completely. I will also use it times when it's kind of, there's a lot of mold. It's damp, moist, humid.
Yeah.
I think it can help maybe ward off sauerkraut, like a preventative again.
I mean, all these things are natural. So
Right. It's
really no harm in giving it. The other thing is, look at the product, look online, and see if it's something for you.
Right.
Read the instructions, everything else for you. And if it's right for you, you could try it.
If your chicken is very, very sick, like if you have a bad coccidiosis outbreak, I would not go to a supplement as their...
No, I would go to a vet and figure out what you need to do.
Get them a Corid or another coccidostat.
Right.
So again, I can say that I really see a difference in my flock when I use this. I can't make any specific claims, nor would I want to.
No, this is just to enhance...
Right.
Kind of like a multivitamin for people.
Sort of,
There's also the powder vitamins that we use. So there's different things out there, but this product is very good.
Yeah.
And so that's why we wanted to give it a little spot on our retail therapy.
Right. And the chickens don't seem to mind the taste. When I use this regularly, I do think my chickens look and act pretty healthy when they've been on the Ropa for a few days at a time.
That's always a good thing to try.
Yeah.
It's natural, so you can't go wrong. But
Right. Like
I said, you have to check out the product for yourself and see if it's for you or not. But we just put it out there as a spotlight, so it's something as an option to give people.
Exactly.
Okay, so I think that we should go ahead and say goodbye to everybody. But before we go, what should we always tell everyone to do?
Hug your chickens daily.
Hug them every day. We'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show so that we can bring you even more high-quality chicken content, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thanks for listening.